Sound Pages is a literary series featuring resident artists in the Jack Straw Writers Program.
"I will not be silenced," floated in her mind. Trapped in a body by the virtue of her own mind, prisoner enslaved, or maybe restraint, she continued.
This program features the work of 2023 writer Nancy Mboro. In the first half, you'll hear her conversation with curator Priscilla Long, recorded in the Jack Straw studio.
So you are a performing poet, and you're writing your first novel, and the protagonist is an East African immigrant, which you are as well, correct? And could you first say, what is your Jack Straw project? Tell us what the project is.
So the story is about a character called Nuru, who's an immigrant from Kenya. She comes here as an international student on a visa that was given to her based on her ability to perform. But when she comes to America, she loses her voice because of trauma. And now it's the journey of her trying to find her voice, both physically and figuratively. And also it also discusses just the complexities that comes with like being an immigrant. Yeah.
Great, great. Where in Kenya did you grow up?
So in Kenya, I grew up in a really small area. It's actually, growing up, we called it a shopping center. It wasn't big enough to be called a town. It's called Dogoto. And like the largest town that you can find on a map really close to it, it's called Kikuyu. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Dogoto. That's where I grew up.
Okay. And when did you start writing poetry?
So when I was back in Kenya, there was an option for schools to write an original poem. Okay. And some of the people who would coach us were always the same every year. And some of them wanted like a collaborative process. So they would be like, ooh, let's write this piece together or like run ideas by us. So I think the seed was there, but I never actively wrote until like I came here to America. And I felt like for me, poetry was like an outlet for me to communicate and vocalize things.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. And what about fiction? When did you start writing fiction?
Ooh, everybody in boarding school wrote fiction.
Oh.
So because we didn't have TVs, what would happen is we'd get really bored. Mm-hmm. And at first, we would try to sneak in novels. And then at some point, the school started banning novels because they're like, some people are bringing like not age-appropriate novels. And so they banned novels. And so we'd try and have to get them at the library. But then there were all this like restrictions. You can only have it for 1 day, 2 days. And so people started being creative. So people would write novels on like their exercise books, and because they wrote it, they want you to trade, so you have to write your own so that you have something to trade with another student in class. So you would keep reading somebody else's novel, and then you'd be like, could you finish? I mean, you only left it like this chapter. So for me, I was always a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. And so I would tell people stories, and then I would also be writing stories on my notebook and using it to trade throughout. So that's where kind of like the seed for fiction. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. What a great educational system, even if it didn't mean to be.
Yeah.
That's great. And so you have three languages, right?
Yes.
So yes. English, Swahili, and what was the other? What's the third language?
The third one is Kikuyu.
Kikuyu.
Yeah.
And that's?
So that's my mother tongue. So mm-hmm. it's also the language of my tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And so does living within and among three languages add richness to your poetry and your fiction?
Oh, yes. Because growing up, we read different type of books. There were like the English books, and then we also had to read like Swahili books. You couldn't read books based on your tribe because not everyone was in your tribe.
Oh.
So I grew up reading like both English books and also Swahili books. And then you'd have to do tests on them. So I didn't like that part. But I liked the part of like seeing how these writers were writing according to their context and according to their region. And so they had a style to it. Like even poems in Swahili, they have certain rules. And they're not the same as the rules you'd use in English. So it's always really good, the difference in storytelling from the other mm-hmm. side. And so mm-hmm. sometimes I bring it up in my own writing where I'll be like, ooh, I saw this really nice way this writer did, but it was in a Swahili book. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen it in like an English book. So I do think that it does bring a lot because I have read other writers that are writing in non-English. So.
And do you ever write in Swahili?
Oh, no, I wouldn't because... though I can read and write in it, there's a perfection. Like I said, it's also a whole industry in itself.
Oh.
And so I don't think I would make the cut. Some people are really good into it, have perfected it. And so sometimes it would be like, oh, that sentence is looking funny. So
oh, okay.
So the standards are pretty high. So I don't think I would write in Swahili, but I do enjoy reading the books in Swahili.
Yeah. And what was your is your tribe, I should say?
My tribe is Kikuyu.
Oh, Kikuyu. And that's the language also?
Yes.
And would you write in that language?
Oh, no. No, that one is even a lot more harder. For Kikuyu, I do have, like, I can hear, but I'm not very fluent in talking it orally or reading it. But I can be able to hear conversations.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what is your daily or weekly or what is your practice of doing your writing?
I wish I had something like very consistent. I'm usually a very emotional or I would say reactive writer. My motivation will come from like either an experience I've had, and then now I feel like, ooh, I need to get this on a piece of paper. So I'm not always consistent. And mm-hmm. when I have been consistent, like when I'm not in a very emotional state, I haven't always loved that work. But right now I'm working on being more consistent. But I'm mostly a very emotional, triggered by life experiences or whatever is happening in the national climate. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so who do you see as your audience?
I feel like my experience or the experiences I write in my work are very like universal for a lot of immigrants or first generation immigrants. Mm-hmm. I think they are able to really relate to some of those experiences. So I would say when I write, I think those are the people who would connect to it. I do think audience changes also. So I'm not sure about what will happen in the future. I think the world is changing and people are being a little bit more open-minded to learn about the experiences of other people. Mm-hmm. So I think the audience might change. Yeah.
Let's see. And what is your vision for the future, like taking like 5 years or 5 years or so in terms of your work, in terms of your writing and your poetry and your novel writing?
So I haven't been published yet. Though I've written a lot of poems, I have not submitted it to like any literary magazine. So hopefully within 5 years, I want to have maybe at least published some of my poetry.
Yes.
I definitely want to have finished the book I'm working on right now, Sauti, and mm-hmm. be working on other projects. I hope to get it published. I would also, because I want to go kind of, you know, do the artist roadmap, I definitely want to find an agent who's wants to work with me and appreciates the type of work that I'm mm-hmm. writing, because I also don't want to compromise,
right.
You know, my style or what the focus of the type of books that I write.
Now we'll hear a selection from Nancy's live reading.
Sauti. Nuru starred on the hospital bed. The halter monitor beeped erratically. She was bombarded by the memories of that morning. Her chest felt constricted. Her breathing got heavier. She felt as if something was lodged in her throat, and her hands attempted to disarm the invisible restraint. She became frantic. Her father had always told her, "Dalili ya mvua ni mawingu." And though she did not want to admit it, every cell in her body screamed something was amiss. It was a feeling that she regularly experienced, but had learned to shelf away. Immigrants had no time to rest or even get sick. A nurse rushed into the room and attempted to make her lie down, but her cries only became more hysterical. The nurse grabbed a needle and took a colorless vial from her pocket and injected it. Once the needle was full, she flicked it with her finger and proceeded to inject it into the saline bag attached to Nuru's hand. Nuru's grip began to loosen. Her vision became blurry as she floated into unconsciousness. Nuru's eyes fluttered open. The slightly open shades indicated that the sun had already set. She wiggled her fingers, which still felt cramped. Her body still felt limp. Any attempts to move failed. Doctors and nurses filtered in and out of the room, scribbling notes from the machine. She had had one nurse mention that they had called her emergency contact. As an international student, she had no family in the States that she knew of, unless her Uncle Simon, who was currently residing in Kenya, had bought a ticket, flown to the States, and was en route to the hospital within the last 24 hours. It was highly unlikely. There had to be a mistake. They must have gotten her file mixed up with somebody else's. She was subjected to more tests. The doctor asked her to open her mouth wide as he used a small flashlight to inspect it. He then prompted her to stick her tongue out. "Say ah," the doctor prompted. She opened her mouth and contorted it, but no words came out. "It's good to see that you are finally relaxed. We had to sedate you when the young lady brought you in. She said that you had a meltdown. Can you explain to me why?" he asked, pausing for a moment. Nuru knew the young woman the doctor alluded to had to be her roommate, Claire. She would not be surprised that the girl bolted the minute she got her signed in. Claire was extremely wary of governmental organizations or institutions linked to them. Nuru opened her mouth. Her lips moved, but no words came out. She cleared her throat again and attempted to speak, but nothing came out. "The young lady stated that you haven't said a word in a month. Is this true?" Nuru nodded. "Have you been experiencing any pain around your throat or chest area?" Nuru shook her head from side to side. The doctor continued to ask more questions and scribbled some notes on his notepad. Nuru's leg tapped anxiously on the bed. All she could think was how much being in the hospital would cost her. As is, she could barely afford to keep afloat. Though her visa required her to have health insurance, she knew it was only useful to cover basic doctor appointments and not overnight stays. Once he was done, the nurses proceeded to take her temperature and blood pressure. She looked up when she heard a knock at the door that was slightly ajar. She froze, as she thought she saw a ghost. An elderly black man with a woman walked in. His features mirrored hers, her obscenely large forehead and that iconic Wayaki striking nose. He was the spitting image of her father, only younger and a tad shorter. "Ruru, oh my God," he said as he proceeded to wrap his arms around her. "I don't know if you remember me. The last time I saw you, ulikuwa msichana mdogo." Then she felt it, the crack in her throat, a sound so foreign to her since her arrival. She did not know why she cried. If it was because this was the first time someone had sincerely embraced her since her arrival, or was it because he was the spitting image of her late father, or was it simply because someone had actually cared? She did not know for how long they embraced, until they heard the awkward clearing of the throat from the woman who had now moved to the corner. "Ruru, I don't know if you remember my wife Achola," her Uncle Richie said as he introduced her. How could she not remember Aunt Achola? She was legendary. Though she was too young to remember her face, she remembered the stories they told about her. The woman who caused her uncle to leave his family. She was a tall, dark-skinned beauty. Her flawless dark chocolate skin was complemented by her curvy figure and athletic physique. She had an accentuated bottom and her chest was smaller. "I'm glad you're all here," the doctor said. "I have some good news and bad news concerning Nuru's health. Which would you like to hear first?" "The good news," her uncle replied. "Well, Nuru is in perfectly good shape. Actually, much more than people her age," the doctor said as he flipped through Nuru's file. "What is the bad news then?" her uncle asked. "After conducting some rudimentary tests, it would seem that Nuru has selective mutism." "What does that even mean?" Aunt Achola asked. "We suspect that her inability to talk is triggered by some psychological trauma," the doctor explained. "So you're basically saying that this is all in her head?" Aunt Achola threw back. "Honey," Uncle Richie reprimanded as he proceeded to reach out for Aunt Achola's hand. He squeezed it as if sending her a hidden message. "It's the truth. The doctor basically said that there's no physical evidence of her illness," she replied. "How long will it last?" Uncle Richie asked as he stared at Nuru with concern. "It all depends. It's unusual to see such cases in adults. It mostly occurs in children. The current theory is if she's able to overcome the trigger, she should be able to regain her ability to speak again," the doctor replied. Was this how it felt to be betrayed by one's own body? To repeat a command only to have your body fail to execute? She thought it cruel that an armor she had often felt was invincible as she jumped down the jacaranda trees, scaled the neighbor's walls, and fell off bicycles had finally cracked at the ripe age of 24. With all the new information, she felt like her mind was trapped in a speeding train that seemed to see no end. Words formed in her mind. She opened her mouth, ready to recite the words that longed to escape her. "I will not be silenced," floated in her mind. Trapped in a body by the virtue of her own mind, prisoner enslaved, or maybe restraint, she continued. "Stuck in an illusion, duped by the dealer of life that I had any real power, only to realize I had been dealt a bad hand." She imagined herself back on stage, her deep vibrato echoing in each corner. She imagined the energy emanating from the audience as they waited in anticipation. She knew where she would add a dramatic pose. Smiling, she visualized how she would hunch her body and change her voice to mimic a prisoner. She imagined the audience captivated by her words and the cheers of applause that would follow. But as she opened her mouth, nothing followed. Her mouth betrayed her. Silence was all that echoed. She had heard of amputees and how they still felt the sensation of their amputated limbs long after they were gone. She could still feel her voice lingering, a ghost of her performance past taunting her. She had nothing of value to offer in this country. Her voice was all she had. Her visa and scholarship were contingent on her ability to perform. A conversation from the hallway filled the room. Her uncle and aunt looked like mimes. Her aunt's hands flared right and left while her uncle paced back and forth through the slightly open door. She listened. "Look, I feel bad for her, but we need to distance ourselves from this. She is not our priority," her aunt Achola said. "How can you say that? That is my brother's only daughter. She is my concern." "You mean the brother who joined your family as they kicked us out? The day we left, I thought we were done with all of them." "Look at her. She has no one. She can't even talk. She looks like she hasn't had a decent meal in a while." "This is America. Everyone needs to watch out for themselves. We can't afford to take her in." "She needs us, honey. Please do this for me. She literally showed up from nowhere. We don't know what she's caught up in. If this is a juju or a village power situation, I want nothing to do with it, Richie. You hear me? I don't want anyone or anything to jeopardize what we have." "That is my niece. You can't expect me to just abandon her. I'm helping her whether you like it or not." "Then you better find another place to live, because as long as you are helping that girl, I want nothing to do with you," Aunt Achola said. She grabbed her handbag and proceeded to leave Nuru's uncle in the hallway. Thank you.
Sound Pages is a Jack Straw production, produced by Carlos Nieto and Daniel Gunther at Jack Straw Cultural Center. Our recording engineers are Daniel Gunther, Aisha Ubiadelica, and Steve DeTore. Our theme music is by Brian Smith, produced through the Jack Straw Artist Support Program. The 2023 curator of this program is Priscilla Long, and the narrator for this podcast is Carlos Nieto. The Jack Straw Writers Program was inspired by an over-the-back fence conversation in 1996 between author Rebecca Brown and Jack Straw Executive Director Joan Rabinowitz. The program is made possible with support from the City of Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, For Culture, Washington State Arts Commission, the U District Partnership, National Endowment for the Arts, Rainier Institute and Foundation, Arts Fund, and individual contributors. All of the writers heard in this series are published in the Jack Straw Writers Anthology. You can subscribe to this and other Jack Straw podcasts through your favorite podcast app. To hear more episodes and learn about our other programs, visit us at jackstraw.org.